Hey guys, Brent Mail here from Photo Prophet, the podcast about the business of photography. And today my special guest is Verena Patel from the United States. She's an amazing landscape photographer. And we call this podcast Finding Your Groove, finding the place when it comes to photography where you can actually make your money. Now, Verena's tried a number of things to make money out of photography, and she settled on creating video lessons and selling them online. And we're going to explore how to do it, you know, all the things involved when it comes to creating video and the audio that goes with it. And Verena's got some great tips for you on how to get started if you want to create video content and sell it online. Just remember, guys, all show notes are at photoprophet.net. Let's jump right into it.
Photo Prophet. Make more profit in your photography business.
How are you doing, Verena?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Awesome. Now, Verena and I go back a few years, actually. I think it was about 2 years ago that I interviewed you guys for the first time.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Maybe a little longer.
Okay, might be. All right, so let's just jump right in, Verena. So why is it a good idea to find your groove when it comes to making money out of photography?
Well, I think the issue that people run into is that they get an idea of what they're going to do with their photography. A lot of times that is selling prints, right? That's what most of us think of when we think of being or maybe writing for magazines or selling photos to magazines, right? And then when we find that we're not selling as many as we'd like, or we're not getting as many covers as we'd like, it's really easy to give up and say, well, I guess I just wasn't cut out to be a photographer, darn. And then you're disappointed and you go off and you don't quit your day job. But I think that there is so much opportunity out there for photographers, but maybe it's not as easy to find as just jumping into the first thing that comes your way.
Okay. So you've tried a few things, obviously made money in certain areas, and maybe not made as much as you wanted to. And you've kind of jumped from one thing to the next to try for certain things until you found the one that works. And we'll get into that. So maybe you can just run through what you've actually tried in the past and where you've made money and, you know, what hasn't worked for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I have done everything from weddings and events and portraits to shooting interiors for hotel chain, to shooting for stock, to writing ebooks, to doing video courses, and probably some other things that I'm not even thinking of right now.
So like weddings and events, normally people can make quite good money out of those.
But I found that I really didn't enjoy it. They were very, very stressful for me. I'm really an introvert. I guess I prefer not to be around groups of people, and I tend to get stressed and feel really exhausted by the time it's over. And also, shooting weddings is extremely time consuming. It's people think you just show up for the wedding. It's a couple hours and then you move on. But the reality is it takes a lot more than that.
True. So you've tried all these things. You've shot weddings, events, stock. You've written ebooks. So what worked for you?
Well, I think at this point, what's working now is our video courses that we're shooting all over the world. Jay and I do this together, my husband, Jay Patel. So that's been great for us. And maybe your listeners don't know that you were the key to that. You started it.
Oh, well, you guys actually came to me and said, hey, look, we want to do a workshop in Australia because Jay's job, he got a redundancy at his job. So you had a bit of time and you wanted to come to Australia and do a workshop. And I suggested, hey, while you're here, let's create a course. And we did it. And that was the Ultimate Landscape Photography course, which has sold really well. We've all made some good money out of that. So you came out here, you recorded the course, and then we all promoted it. Like, how did that change everything? How did that change your view of making money out of photography?
You know what? It really was a complete paradigm shift for us. We went from, I should say we were at the time, doing ebooks. They were selling very, very well. We were teaching workshops on location. They were filling up quickly and, we were really enjoying that. But again, the amount of work that goes into those is huge and the return is not that great. You know, even a workshop where you make a good chunk of money in one weekend, unless you're teaching workshops pretty consistently, it's really hard to make a living just doing that. So when we started doing these video courses, we realized that we could work, you know, normal people hours. and by that, I mean the normal number of hours, not the, you know, normal hours that other people are working. It's certainly not a 9-to-5 job. But, you know, we could work a reasonable number of hours, make a reasonable amount of money and feel good about what we were doing, you know, really enjoy it and really eliminate quite a lot of the stress that comes along with teaching workshops.
Yeah. And I think workshops are great. The thing about it is you've got to trade your time for money. So you're out there, you're helping people photograph landscapes, you're teaching them. You know, I watched you guys teaching the workshop and I noticed how like intensely focused you were on the participants in the workshop, the people coming to the workshop. You know, how you run around, you're working on people's camera settings, you're making sure that they're getting great value from the workshop. But afterwards, after like 5 days, I think the workshop was 5 days or something, you know, it's pretty exhausting because you totally focused on the people that are there and you're actually not really, you know, taking your own photos and not really doing what you wanted to do, which was come out to Australia and take beautiful photos. And I think with a video course, after that, we created the video course, which was quite intense too, because we only had a limited amount of time and we were out filming, you know, most of like maybe too many hours every day. And, but the good thing about video courses is once it's done, it leverages your time because you can sell it for the next few years online and you don't have to actually be there to do it. You're not trading time for money anymore. And that's a great thing about it. But let's jump into actually what it takes to create a video course. Maybe you can run through the steps of, okay, so someone listening to this is a great photographer and they want to create a video course to put online to leverage their time so they can sell it for the next few years. What does it actually take to create a course?
Well, it takes quite a variety of skills, right? A variety of skill sets. So first of all, you need to have the photo skills, like you said. We also needed videographers, and that's where you and Johnny came in. So that's, you know, you guys came out and you were our crew. And since then, we actually had my brother and his wife help us out for one course, which was really neat to be able to work with them. But what we found is that we can't shoot these courses ourselves. We, you know, even though there are two of us, it's just not enough because not only are we dealing with teaching the photography and also filming, but we also have to deal with more than one camera angle for the videography and the audio, which can be pretty complicated. And that was something we learned down there, you know, with you guys in Australia with the cicadas and the pounding surf and the wind, you know, all those things that you don't think about as a photographer, they really matter when you're shooting video.
Yeah. So let's dig a little bit deeper into the audio side, because as photographers, we don't realize how complex the audio can be. And maybe, you know, you're talking about the, you know, the cicadas, the what we call the Christmas beetles over here. They make a massive noise around Christmas. They just screech in the forests, and you actually got to get away from the bush or the forest to actually record anything worthwhile. You know, we've got the wind, like, so as soon as the wind gets above a certain speed, it gives that you know, like a on your
well,
yeah, mic. So you can't actually use a shotgun mic on top of the digital SLR when you're recording because of the wind noise. Or you can if you've got a dead cat on it, but at a certain wind speed that doesn't work either. What other issues did we have with the audio and how did we solve that?
Well, you know, there were issues with the difference in the audio quality based on where you put the mic, you know. So if it was hanging over you, it had a nice quality. If you put it on your jacket, maybe you were picking up the motion or the movement of your clothing or you know, anytime it brushed against you somehow. There was a difference between indoor and outdoor sound quality and trying to get that quality to match, which was really hard. And then, of course, the background noises like you were talking about, and also just people going by, cars going by, all those issues. And then, of course, once you get it back home and you're dealing with it in post, that's a whole different skill set, too.
Okay, so a couple more questions on the audio. What kind of tools did we use? So, you know, when people are thinking about filming someone talking to the camera, they often think about, okay, so you may put a shotgun mic on top of the camera, and it's pointing at the person speaking to the camera, so it captures that person and not too much of the environmental sounds. So that's one way to do it. So what did we actually use, Verena?
We actually ended up using the Zoom recorders and little lapel mics, which were fantastic. And Brent made these great little afros for each of the lapel mics. And, you know, so that was our tiny little dead cat for the lapel mic.
So if people don't know what a dead cat is, it's like this little fluffy thing that goes on the microphone to stop the wind noise.
Mm-hmm. And it really does kind of look like a dead
yes,
cat.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So we named all our dead cats. Very, very good companions during our travels. But yeah, very, very useful for the wind, because without them, the wind noise was just, it was unusable audio, absolutely unusable.
And often we'd actually film your back facing the wind. So that way you could actually stop the wind from hitting the microphone, which is on your lapel or clipped to the somewhere near your throat area. And if people don't understand what we're doing, let me explain it in a different way. So we, instead of having an audio mic running to a transmitter, which then transmits to a receiver and then it goes straight into your camera, the audio jack in your camera, what we did was we actually recorded the audio on the person we were filming. So Verena had a Zoom H1, which is a little like a handy audio recorder. And then we had a lapel microphone going from her lapel into the recorder, which is in a pocket, back pocket or side pocket of your pants or whatever. And we had a little system for making sure that the audio was on. So there's one little button on the Zoom H1, which is really simple. You press it and then the light comes on and then you're recording. And
so red light check.
Yes. So we had a red light check every time. So we're filming. We had a shotgun microphone on our camera as a second audio, you know, source. And then we had the Zoom H1 recording on the person. And then we also used, what do we use to sync up the audio? So if people don't understand this, so later on in post, when you're editing and putting it all together, you actually got to synchronize the audio on the person with the audio on the camera so that, you know, when you move your lips, the right sound is coming out.
But then you actually turn off the sound from the camera so that there's, you know, so it's not an overlay. And of course, the sound on the camera isn't very good. So you don't really want that there. So it's that process that it takes some learning. And it you know, there are a variety of software applications that you can use to do that.
So there's one simple thing we used. Do you remember what it is, Verena, to synchronize it?
Oh, yeah, our clap. Yeah, the clap.
Yeah, so we'll run in front of Verena and we'll clap really loud. And that little spike in the audio, you can see it on the camera and on the audio device. And that's really easy in post to then synchronize the two.
So yeah, if you've ever seen a video of, you know, some kind of film recording happening, you'll see them hold up a little board and it has a little piece at the top that you open and close. It makes a little snapping sound. And a lot of times it'll have a little chalkboard or something on it. It'll have the name of the scene. But that's what that's for. That little snapping sound shows up as a spike in the audio, and that's how you can align it.
All right. So that's the audio covered. That's how we did the audio, guys. So when it comes to the video, how did we do that, Verena? What did we use?
Yeah. So that was fun. Luckily we already understood the way light works thanks to our photography. But you know what? There's a whole different element when it comes to videography. So what we had set up is we were using two cameras. One was, well, I should say three cameras, I suppose, because one was the one that the photographer was using, right? Jay or I, as we were teaching. And then we had one that was set up to capture the scene on a tripod. So it was getting stills, not stills, sorry. It was held still, but it was shooting video.
Yeah, and a wider angle, I think.
Yeah, and a wider angle, exactly. And then Brent was going with his second camera set in video mode, and he had it on, what's it called, Brent? Your little non-tripod-y
thing. Oh, yes, like my Steadicam. So something to hold the camera still while you're moving around.
Yeah, so it's got like a counterbalance and a stabilization system, yes, that you're, as you move, the camera stabilizes itself so it never jerks or wobbles or anything like that too excessively. sort of cancels out your natural movement as much as it can. So you were going around and you know, filming us or zooming into the back of the camera or you know, getting in close to show details. So we had those two cameras going. And then on top of that, Johnny was taking notes as we went through. And he was saying, okay, so you talked about the histogram and you talked about, I don't know, adjusting the aperture or something like that. And he would, after we had filmed the whole lesson, we would actually go back and do close-up shots, video shorts of, you know, just my finger adjusting the aperture or turning a filter or, you know, whatever it was. So that, or the back of the camera, which was really important for a big part of it. So that really made a big difference.
And that's super important, guys. If anyone's ever going to do video lessons, you need someone making notes of all the B-roll footage that you need to put into the lesson, because it gets a little boring just watching someone talk to the camera. You want to break it up a little bit with some extra footage. So sometimes you can actually use still images there. So you might just take a still image of the back of the camera and insert that. Or you can take a still image of the scene that Verena's shooting and insert that too. But what we did was we got some video of Verena, you know, on the back of the screen, moving around, showing it again. So sometimes you have to actually film the lesson and then afterwards figure out all the little B-roll footage that you need and then film that afterwards. So we get Verena to do it again. So basically, the person teaching the lesson has to be a bit of an actress or an actor, because you got to redo it again, a lot of the stuff. And also, we had two different makes of cameras. We had a Canon and a Nikon filming. And that also brings in quite a lot of complexity when you're putting them into a video editing software, because the picture styles and the white balance isn't often the same. So to flick from one camera to the next, you got to tone the different camera scenes so that they look the same. So there's a lot of things in there. I would suggest, if anyone's ever going to do this and you're going to use two cameras, make sure they're the same model.
Yeah, that would definitely be the easier way to go. We spent a lot of time comparing different picture styles on the Nikon versus the Canon just to try and match them up and get something as close as possible. And if you really watch those early lessons, you'll actually notice that there's a little bit of switching back and forth when it comes to color balance.
Yeah, and also we were trying to shoot it with a very shallow depth of field too. So we wanted like a cinematic look on these videos, and we wanted to obviously separate ourselves from the competition and not just have something that everything's in focus. We wanted to have Verena in focus and the background slightly out of focus, and then, you know, we just wanted a really nice shallow depth of field look on all the video.
Mm-hmm. But you know, on that note, we should point out that it's really important not to use autofocus when you're using a shallow depth of field like that, because we actually have footage we couldn't use where, you know, the focus is jumping between my face and what's behind me and back and forth as I'm speaking, because I don't hold still when I speak. I move a little bit. And so the camera would try and focus behind me and then it would focus on my face. And obviously that's completely unusable. So,
and that comes down to the aperture that you're using. So, you know, with the depth of field range, so you want to have it in a range that that someone, when they're talking, obviously their eyes are in focus and then their nose is out of focus and they move 1 inch back and then everything's out of focus. You don't want that. It adds an extra complexity to creating video. Now, so we've gone through the audio settings that you need and some of the tools we're using. We've gone through the video. I think probably the most important thing, Verena, is the actual content, the lesson that you putting together. And I think that's where the real skill comes into this. Okay, so you can always hire or, you know, get a crew to come in and film you. But the real skill comes to putting together the course. So let's run into that. So how do you actually put together a full course, you know, with quite a few lessons in a way that's going to really teach your audience? And I suppose you've got a lot of experience putting together ebooks and writing blogs on your website, visualwilderness.com. And, you know, doing all that for quite a few years. So that's obviously helped putting together a video course. Now, so what are the steps you take when you create a new video course?
Well, it starts with brainstorming. We start talking about what kinds of subjects we think most people are going to be interested in learning about, most photographers. So we don't want to be too advanced because we're then, of course, narrowing our potential pool of people who might buy, right? Potential buyer pool is narrowed if we're too advanced. If we're too beginner, then people are, you get kind of annoyed if you buy a product and you don't learn anything. You want people to really learn. So that's important, but it can't be too complicated. So you're looking for a very broad audience. So that's the first thing. Then we start, talking about specific things. We've done one on filters. We've done one on histograms. We've done one on focus and another on hyperfocal distance. So there are all these different things that we've talked about. And then, once we have a couple of topics that are potentials, we start an outline and we'll say, okay, if we're going to do exposure, for example, then we need to cover aperture. We need to cover shutter speed. We need to talk about these, different things. And then we start really narrowing it down within those subject areas to talk about individual lessons that need to be taught. So it's really, we start out with a pretty detailed outline of the things that we need to talk about. And on top of that, we say, okay, so, this particular subject might be a little bit more complicated to understand. Let's make sure we include a special section on that and maybe do a case study. That's part of how we teach too. We do these case studies where we walk you through the whole process as we actually shoot in the field. And we've found that that's a really good way to, connect with our audience beyond just, I'm standing at the front of the classroom teaching you. So, we're doing all of this in the field. And then to be able to take it a little bit further and to take you through an actual case study where we cover that particular subject is really important. So we're actually planning each of those case studies as we go as well. But I think really the hardest part of the whole process of getting this all put together is that once we're in the field, we know when we write up this outline for the course that we need certain conditions and certain locations in order to talk about some of these concepts. Some of them can be done anywhere, but not all of them. And so, then we have to coordinate everything, make sure that we're in the right place at the right time with the right light, and we're ready with our crew. We're ready to talk about whatever it is that we're going to talk about. We have our gear ready at the right moment. And, all of you landscape photographers out there who know how hard it is to capture that moment of perfect beauty in the sunset, now imagine also having to teach a lesson and have all your video and audio and everything ready to go at that particular moment. It's a feat.
Yeah, it's pretty complex. And I think anyone thinking to this might say, hey, this is just too hard to do. There's a lot of things that need to come together. And that's where having, I think, a good video crew really takes the stress off, because then the person teaching really only has to focus on what they're teaching and getting the lesson across, and then actually taking the right photo so that you can overlay them afterwards.
Yeah, that's absolutely key. And I would actually recommend to people who want to do this, before you spend $1 million and go out there and find your perfect location and have your course planned out and you're going to shoot it in this remote location, go out in your backyard and try and film yourself doing a lesson just for the experience, because Brent, you're absolutely right. It is not reasonable to go out there and think that you can record a course of yourself. It doesn't sound that complicated, but trust me, once you're out there, it's a whole different world. So don't spend your money and then be disappointed because you didn't bring a crew along. Try it out somewhere it doesn't cost you money to get to, and then you'll find yourself hiring a good crew.
Awesome. So we'll get into more action steps in a minute. So, things for people to do. One question I wanted to ask you about creating the course is, do you have a framework for the lesson? So do you have a way that you actually teach your one lesson? So the course might be broken up into, 7 or 15 lessons or whatever it is, and a few case studies. Does each lesson fall into some kind of framework?
It does in a way, yeah. What we're generally doing is we're presenting the concept, explaining how it applies to the overall subject of the course, and then we're breaking it into very simple pieces to show how it works and the technical side of it. And then we do some kind of physical, visual explanation. So, you know, so that you can see us using this particular piece of equipment, or you can see how the back of the camera changes as we make this adjustment or whatever it is.
All right. So that's the creating the course section. What have I missed here, Verena? So we've gone figuring out what the course needs to be. We've gone through the video. We've gone through the audio. We've gone through the creating the course. What other things do people need to consider when they...
I think we've missed something pretty huge. And that is, just because you have a product doesn't mean it's going to sell.
Yes, promoting it. Yeah, totally.
Promoting it, marketing, getting it out there in front of people where they can see it. That is absolutely huge. And one of the things that we've done is we create short little videos, which are little intros to our courses. And then we use those, and that's part of how we market our courses. So you might have seen on our website or on social media somewhere, you know, one of our short little sales videos. And they're just a couple minutes long. We try and keep them as short as we can. But we give people a little bit of information about who we are and what we do, and then, you know, an overview of the course so that they know what it's about. And then, of course, the cover is pretty important because it needs to look professional. It needs to look simple and beautiful. It needs to be readable. Probably professional is the most important thing there, you know. And then, you know, we need to have a website that looks professional. We need to have a way to get people to our website, and that's where our blog comes in. And for you, you have your community and your blog, and you have other videos as well that you put out. We do the same thing. We have lots and lots of videos on our YouTube channel, and, you know, all kinds of little things that are always pulling people in. You know, come and read this great blog post. Oh, and do you want to buy a course? You know, come and watch this interesting little quick tutorial video. Oh, and do you want to buy a course? You know, yeah, and join our mailing list, and we'll send you little tips in the mail. And, you know, also, if you want to, you can buy our course.
I know we're just kind of running through that really quickly. And look, we could do a whole blog, I mean, whole podcast on just the content marketing side of this. So what Verena's using, and Jay and me, is we use content marketing to get eyes on your website, eyes on your content. So you give out really good information for free, and then people come back to your course, and if they want to learn something more, then they can buy a premium course and jump into the actual premium lesson. So that's a very huge part. Actually, what I found is the energy we put into creating a course, even though it's pretty complex and there's a lot of things that need to go right to make it happen, you put in an equal amount of energy in marketing the course, getting it out there.
Absolutely. And probably even more energy into maintaining a steady stream of good free content to keep people interested in coming back.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about is the production part of the course. So once we've actually got all the footage in the field and we've recorded it, all the audio, all the video, or the screen, or the still images, you know, sometimes there's things we need to do back in the studio, and that's maybe a screen capture on the post-processing. Like, say, if you're editing one of the landscape images, you might record that with a voiceover. And then there's putting it all together, the production side. And we outsource some of that, and we do some of that ourselves. So we've actually got a video guy in Scotland, Russell.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Russell.
who does all the video editing and puts it all together for us. And we've also got tools that we use to make sure that the project is running properly. We use Trello, which is a free project management software online that we use to make sure that each lesson is coming out right. And if we didn't use that, we'd be in trouble. So you need to manage the whole production side of it, which is another whole podcast we could do on that. But
it keeps us coordinated across the globe, which
yes,
is a big part of this for us, because we're working with our Australian film crew. Jay and I are based in the US, and Russell is off in Scotland. So we're all over the world.
We are. And let's just recap what we've talked about so far, Verena. So we've run through, you know, finding your groove, basically, you know, how do you make money? How do you find which area in photography you can make money? And you've obviously tried a lot of things. You've tried all sorts of wedding events, stock photography, ebooks, and everything. And you've fallen into the video, making video lessons, so teaching through video as the place where you guys are making money. We've run through what it actually takes to create a course, which is there's quite a lot involved in creating a course, with
both on location and in post processing.
And then we've gone through what, you know, like creating the lesson, like how to do that, and then the production, and then the marketing part of it, how to get the course in front of people. Now let's go through some action steps, Verena. So if someone wants to take this route and they want to start creating video lessons, what would you suggest people do, a couple of action steps that they can start with? And can I throw in one to start with first before? Like, so for me, like Verena, I'm a bit of an introvert. And I was the person in high school who, when you had to go stand up in front of class and say something, I'd be hiding in the back corner hoping they'd never call my name.
I was back there too, but I was shaking uncontrollably. Yeah.
So when I started making videos for YouTube a few years ago, I sucked. I was really, really bad. I couldn't look at the camera. I was stumbling around with my words and everything. But you got to do it. You just got to start making videos. And probably the first video took me about 20 or 30 takes. And I put that online, and I still got it online just to remind me how bad I was. After 30 takes, it's still pretty shocking. But you actually get better at it. You get into a state where you can, it's just a way of teaching. So that would be the first action step I would give anyone who wants to try this, is to film yourself, maybe just yourself filming yourself, so there's no one else around, and try it many, many times until you feel like you're okay. You don't have to be brilliant, but you're okay, because from there you're just going to get better. So that's the first action step. Anything else from your side, Verena?
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And you know, another way you can practice that is to start speaking for local camera clubs and things like that, because a small group of people, speaking in front of a small group of people, can help you start to feel a little bit more comfortable in front of a camera too. You know, part of the problem with speaking in front of a camera is that you know that somebody's going to be watching you. And so that's, you know, another way to do it. Another way to practice that. It is a little bit like public speaking. But then the difference is that with video, you can go back and you can correct your mistakes. So that's, you know, I think sometimes being able to remind yourself of that can take the pressure off. You know, you can go back, you can edit it out, you can fix it, you can make yourself look amazing.
Yeah, so right? For people watching or well, listening to this and actually watching one of your courses, and you look so polished and so good when you're presenting, can you just let people know what that actually takes, how many takes it takes to get that right?
Well, you know, the funny thing, I think everybody should take a look at our bloopers video that I put out a while ago, because you can see the mistakes that we make and the goofy things that we say and, you know, oops, did I say that? You know, it's part of the process. But the other thing is that I think for me, I found that if I was teaching in front of the camera, it only took one take. But if I was trying to film some kind of introduction or explain what I was going to talk about, something like that, oh my gosh. I mean, you remember, Brent, it was terrible. It was stilted. You know, Jay and I both, we would have trouble making eye contact with the camera. We were looking off in weird directions. It was a disaster. So, you know, those we actually ended up, if you watch some of our earlier videos, you will find that the intro, in fact, all of our videos now, the intros are voiceover with dropped in footage, because we found that's just something we weren't very good at. And so we have certainly gotten better at it over time with practice, but we find that it really works well to do a voiceover rather than an actual, you know, talking head, talking into the camera.
Any other action steps you can suggest people do? I mean, I'll throw another one in, guys. I think once you start filming yourself, I think create a couple of YouTube videos and put them online so that other people can see them. That'll give you the confidence that you can actually get your message across. And if you keep doing it on a regular basis, you'll get a lot better at it. And then from there, you can probably create your first course.
And I think I can add to that too. So a couple of things. One is keep them short. Keep in mind that really most people aren't looking for a 2-hour course on the internet. Honestly, a 2 to 5 minute lesson is perfect. Most people won't watch beyond that first 5 minutes anyway. So tailor it to the digital generation, right? Most of us will not watch a 20, 30, 40 minute video. We're more interested in a shorter video. So don't put the pressure on yourself to create something long. In fact, do what you can to shorten it and create something that's quick and then done.
And we've found that by looking at our stats on the videos, and videos that are over 12 minutes, after about 6 or 8 minutes, the drop-off is massive. You're losing probably half to three quarters of the people because they just can't focus for that long. So that's how we've got to that point, if anyone's thinking. So 2 to 5 minutes is a great lesson. So if you got a course, just break it up into really small lessons.
And then the other thing I'd suggest is outlining what you want to say before you say it. Don't script it necessarily, because scripting, reading a script sounds very flat. It sounds very monotonous. It can be difficult to do. But if you have a very clear list for yourself of little points that you want to cover as you go through your lesson, it's going to help you stay on track. And it's also going to help you avoid rambling, which can be a real problem with videos on the internet. So those two things. And then my final thing is, get comfortable with editing. Think about how many videos you've seen on the internet where third of the video is taken up with stuff that you really didn't need to see. Feel comfortable cutting out large sections of recorded video because it's not helpful. Take out the part where you're waiting for your computer to, you know, the screen on the computer to change. It's not necessary. You know, take out the part where you made a mistake. But don't feel like you have to take out all the mistakes either, because, you know, we're all human, and some of that can be funny or make you feel connected to your audience. So yeah, I think, you know, the editing for me, take a look at some of the YouTube videos that are out there, even the ones that don't seem to be professional. The best ones are the ones where you can see that they've been edited, that parts have been edited out.
Yeah. You know, we all put so much energy into creating these videos, so much like emotional, you know, energy, that you actually don't want to get rid of some video footage because you've already emotionally invested in that. And I think it's a good idea to maybe just give that to someone else to cut for you, because then they can cut out. They're not emotionally involved, so they can cut out the things that aren't going to help the lesson. And then another one that you mentioned there, which is really important, guys, is it good enough? It doesn't have to be brilliant. It doesn't have to be like a presenter on TV. It just needs to be good enough to get your message across. And when it's good enough, that's good enough, and you put it out there and you can sell it. Verena, it's been so good talking to you again. You're so full of information. I know we've kind of gone down this journey together, you know, creating these videos. So obviously, I know a lot of things in the background that we've done and covered. So that's great. Thanks, Verena. If anyone wants to find out more about you and what you're doing, where should they go?
You can find me at photographybyverena.com or at visualwilderness.com. And, you know, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Google+, I'm on Twitter, I'm all over the place. I'm hard to miss.
Yeah. And any final words for someone listening to this podcast?
Yeah, I think, you know, we started out talking about finding your groove, and video lessons, video courses might not be your thing. Get out there and look at all of what's available to you. Maybe you don't want to sell prints. Maybe you don't want to shoot weddings, but photography is a huge field. There is so much available. You just have to look for it. You know, when I was a kid, my parents thought that I couldn't make it as a photographer. They were not supportive of the idea that I wanted to be a photographer when I grew up, you know. But for myself, looking at the career I've built, it is a possibility. In fact, it's a very realistic possibility if you're willing to work. There are so many different ways that you can get into photography and make it a living.
So just to reiterate, don't give up, guys. Whatever you're doing, just try. If it's not working, try something else. And you will find your groove. You'll find something that works for you. And people listening to this, Verena, how has this changed your life, the way you do things now, as opposed to when you were trying different things and shooting, you know, weddings and doing ebooks and workshops and all that? How has making video courses changed things for you?
Well, you know what? Part of what's been hard for me specifically is that I have kids. I have a lot of kids, and you know, they require a lot of my time. And being able to focus on photography and building a course while I'm away, and then come home and really focus on my family, has been really important to me. And it's made a huge difference to my life in that way. But also it means that when I'm on location, I can relax and really enjoy what I'm doing, because our film crew is awesome. So much fun to be with. You know, we're always joking around. We're always having fun. And we're out in these amazing locations. So it means that we can go wherever we want to go. We can travel whenever we want to travel within reason. You know, we do have families. All of us have families. We all have children. And so, you know, it's not easy. But while we're there, we can really do what we love doing. And the stress level is so much lower when you're doing something that you love. You're in a place that you love, and you're with people you love.
I mean, that's great. And guys, keep an eye out for the course we're going to create in Fiji. We're just planning that right now. So we're going to go through the whole process that we've spoken about in this podcast, you know, and we're going to create something amazing in Fiji. Awesome. Well, maybe by the time you listen to it, it's already created. So,
right. Well, we'll let you know either way, right?
Totally. So thank you so much, Verena. And we'll put links to how people can actually contact you and see what you're doing. And also we'll put a link to the bloopers video that you've put together, just so that you can see that you don't have to be perfect when you're creating, you know, video content.
Yeah, never take yourself too seriously.
No, I mean, you should never take life too seriously.
That's right.
None of us are getting out of it alive, so yeah.
That's true. It's a good point right there, yeah.
Well, it was so good talking to you again, Verena. I'd love to get you on again in a couple of months' time and maybe dig into, you know, it's other areas of the business, especially the content marketing side, because that really interests me. How do you get people to actually come to your website, you know, and follow you, capture the email, and eventually buy your video courses? So that'll be probably the next podcast on Photo Profit.
I would love to do that. That would be a lot of fun. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. See you later. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
To find out more, go to photoprofit.net. Don't forget to leave Brent some feedback too.